If your passion lies in elite British road racing and you want an inside line on the teams, riders, organisers and sponsors that make this sport such a compelling spectacle, you're in the right place. I'm Timothy John, and joining me for every episode is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Bill Jones.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. We're going to use this platform to talk about all the key issues surrounding the sport. With special guests, deep dives into hot topics and plenty of chat, we'll keep you informed about all things UK racing. Stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast, recorded at the Rayner Foundation's annual dinner and charity auction at the New Dock Hall in Leeds. Now, unless you've recently landed on Planet Cycling, you'll know that the Foundation, a charity set up to honour the memory of the late Dave Rayner, the hugely gifted rider whose life ended in tragic circumstances 29 years ago, has helped scores of young British riders to turn professional by funding them to live and race overseas. Now, I was lucky enough to join my co-host, Phil Jones, Brother UK's Managing Director, at the Rayner dinner last Saturday, where we shared a table with cycling royalty in the form of Lidl Trek's Lizzie Deignan, a former world champion, Olympic silver medalist, and winner of three Monument Classics, and her husband, Phil, the Grand Tour stage winner. In the next 30 minutes or so, you'll hear from key members of the class of 2023, including Rider of the Year, Oliver Knight, key committee members without whom the dinner simply wouldn't take place, the British juniors joining the sport's most prestigious development teams thanks to Rayner support, the young female riders forging a career in a sport that Lizzie Deignan has helped to shape, and in the final part of the episode, you'll hear from Phil, with whom I caught up at the end of a busy evening, in which he'd held detailed conversations with the likes of Giles Pidcock, Tom's father of course, but more importantly in this context, the manager of the Fensham Howes Mass Design Junior Team, who's placed six young British riders with leading development teams. Let's dive in then and immerse ourselves in the sounds of another memorable edition of the Rayner Foundation's annual dinner and charity auction. Now, putting on an event the scale of the Rayner Foundation's annual dinner is no small task. The Foundation's Committee of Volunteers plans several years ahead to ensure guests and riders enjoy an evening to remember. For each committee member, the Foundation is personal. It's had incredible success, of course. Around 90 British riders have turned professional with the charity's support. But this is a way of keeping Dave's memory alive. Let's hear now from Dave's cousin, Josh Cutler, from Tim Harris, Dave's teammate at the revered Rally Banana Squad, and from Dave's wife, Serena Meakin.
I'm a committee member, obviously involved in everything year on year, decision making, everything. But the main role that I give is organising the dinner every year. I front that up, I liaise with the organisers, the hotel, making sure everything's running, what the timings are, sorting all the auction items out, all the tech, all the screens that you see running, all the video montages, everything that you can see. I've got a finger in it somewhere, just to make sure that everything's as we need it, as we want it, and make sure that, you know, the 300 people that sat in the room are happy and try and raise as much money as we can.
If Dave was still about, he'd be absolutely thrilled to see this, because obviously his passion was cycling, and he went to Italy and then made his career off going abroad. So the fact that we can help give these riders a bit of a help on the way, I think, that's really what it's all about. So evenings like this are a really good fun. We meet everybody. And if we can keep them like your podcast and everything, the fact that you're doing it just gives more publicity to what we're trying to do. It's important not just from the fact that it's a nice evening. I think also it's good that it gets a lot of publicity. And to be honest, the COVID years were really difficult because we couldn't have it for 2 years. Last year was really touch and go because obviously everything has to be paid for before. And the figures were low, and only at the last minute we managed to start getting a few more people to come. Now COVID's hopefully out of the way, it's sort of moving up again, so we hope to just to increase the numbers every year. When I first started racing or cycling a long time ago, every single cycling club would have a club dinner, and so I'm originally from Norfolk, so we'd bike to club dinners and then be biking home literally at midnight after a club dinner. So and that was really the tradition of cycling. Obviously I can't see many people biking here and biking home, but yeah, if we can make it a little bit like a traditional club dinner, then that would be great. What I like about this, you've got the young riders, but you've also got faces from the time when I was racing. So it's a big broad spectrum of people that visit this, and I hope there you are. Normally everybody seems to have a good time.
29 years on the 16th of November since Dave passed. It gives me something kind of like to move forward, and his death not to be so much in vain because of the way in which he passed. And then you see all the other riders that have benefited and have then gone on to race on the continent, and obviously they've put their hard work in and they've got to the World Tour. That kind of like helps when a tragedy happens. You kind of like you see something good come out of something. The beginning was kind of like, it was, you know, when Cycle Week was set up, it was to make kind of like sense of what I feel was a needless death. And you look back and you think, gosh, 30 years next year, where's time gone? You still get a buzz when commentators mention that they were Rainer funded riders. You do kind of like get a little bit of your heart skips after all these years. And, you know, because obviously I'm a cyclist, I've not done it at any great level. I'm very much a Sunday cafe cyclist, but even so, I do watch it. You do get pulled into certain events and certain races. And then when the Rainer Fund is mentioned, you do. It does give you a warm, fuzzy feeling. I could have been quite slightly embarrassed. Slightly embarrassed, it's because he was very kind of like a humble person. He'd have kind of like being a little bit humble, but a little bit kind of like, you know, puffing out his chest, like this is all right in my name. Luck's been on our side, and you kind of like sometimes, you know, I'm kind of quite a practical person, but sometimes you kind of think, is he looking down on us?
Now, Lewis Askey, who next year will begin his third season in the UCI World Tour, is one of the Rainer Foundation's many success stories. Lewis closed his campaign by finishing second at Paris-Tours, one of the most respected one-day classics on the professional calendar. Not bad for a 22-year-old competing in only his second season as a professional. Lewis, who won the junior Paris-Roubaix, turned down a place on British Cycling's Senior Academy to join Groupama FDJ's Continental squad before being promoted to its World Tour team. Who better then to ask about the popularity of young British riders among World Tour teams hungry for fresh talent?
I've enjoyed the season. Obviously, I've missed that win, but at the same time, if I said to myself at the start of the year, you're going to come second at Paris-Tours, you know, I was like top 30 in both Flanders and Roubaix, I would have been happy with that. So I don't get loads of opportunities because I'm not the fastest guy, I'm not the best climber, so I kind of have to take the opportunities when they come. But yeah, the times that I have been given an opportunity, like Nokre, I was fifth there, and like when I've been given a free roll, I had a couple of second places, too many second places honestly. So yeah, but no, I've enjoyed my season, and I think that's, yeah, one thing I've always said is I've been super lucky with the support I've had, whether that's been Dave Rainer, whether that's been British Cycling, whether that's been FDJ. I've been super lucky in that. So obviously I have grown up with all my mates cycling as well, and all of them are on different pathways as well. Some of them are going through British Cycling, some of them are through Dave Rainer. So it's like, yeah, I think for sure at the moment you see how many British pros are coming through actually. That's one thing. There's so many of my mates that I've seen in the World Tour Peloton right now, and that's super cool. So yeah, for sure I think it's a good time. What's happened is they've, you know, had the first few guys that have come onto the team, and they've really enjoyed working with the way that the British guys are working. I think a lot of the British guys really are really professional with how they work, and I think they enjoy working with that kind of person. And yeah, they've seen that with a few different guys that they've had through, and I think that's why, that's another big reason why they want to keep them coming through more than just the pure talent on a bike, which obviously has to be there, but that's not the only thing about getting on in teams. A lot of my favourite races that I do are the French Cups, inverted commas, lower level races. I love racing them. There's a lot of guys that just make a living off doing those races. It's a shame that we don't have that structure in the UK. I'd love to race in the UK a lot more. I think it would also bring, like, you see how what the fans are like in France. And when we do have big races in the UK, the fans come out in force, like, often. So I don't have the knowledge to be able to back up my statements of why that is, but whether it's down to, like, I know a lot of times they struggle with getting road closures and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, it's a shame that it's not the same elsewhere.
one of the many impressive aspects of the Rayner Foundation is its ability to remain relevant to the needs of young British riders in an era where development pathways are evolving at an incredible rate. With the average age of new recruits to the World Tour falling every season, the focus of the biggest teams in the sport is already turning from under 23 to junior riders. The Foundation's Gateway project funded 84 British juniors last year, and teams including Giles Pidcock's Fencham Howe's Mass Design Squad. Let's hear now from Giles and from two of his riders, Alex Belden, who next year will join Trinity Racing, and Jacob Busch, who will move to the Netherlands to join Team DSM Firmenex Development Squad. I began by asking Giles to describe the importance of the funding his team receives from the Rayner Foundation's Gateway project.
I think it's of a profound importance. It's made the difference to a whole layer of riders who you could probably loosely categorise as kind of the late developers. So the young superstars get picked up by the big teams. But there's always riders who might have been injured, or they might be focusing on their exams, or they might have just matured later, who come through a different route, like your Hugh Carthys and your Adam Yates. And that the Rayner Fund steps in and gives a little bit of funding to help those riders get it over the line. And now, because the whole thing happens much sooner, then they're providing funding through their Gateway scheme to junior teams like us. So the difference it's made to our team is it probably enables us to do three more trips. And when you're trying to get riders through that process, you can't just take them once, because it's so much different to the UK. What gets them to where they need to be is doing it consistently every few weeks over two seasons. If you took over two seasons six races off our programme, which is the difference that Rayner Fundy makes, I think that might be the difference between riders making it and not. So it's just, I can't say how important it is.
There's been a big debate over the past few months of which team to go to. I had a few options, and Trinity sort of turned out to be the best one for me, because I'm still doing A-levels next year, this year. So Trinity, it offers a lot of flexibility around that. I get to obviously chase my career in cycling, which I've always wanted to do, but also school's a big part, and I want to finish my A-levels pretty well. So they offer this flexibility to do that. I've spoken to Andrew McQuaid, who obviously runs a team. He's said that I'm more than welcome to dip in and out of racing as I see fit. So it offers a lot for me personally. Trinity isn't paid, but the Rayner Foundation provides obviously a lot of financial support for that, which is amazing, to be honest. What they do is really, really helpful for those people.
I'm going to DSM's development team for the next two seasons, and I think the way the scene's going in the UK is the way out for British juniors. I think there's eight boys who all of us are going to Devo teams in abroad. So I think that is a bit of a statement as to maybe what the UK need to do if they want to keep riders in the UK, and they want to have us coming from UK teams and winning. But no, it's the pathway that's like the best option at the minute, so that's where everyone's going. How cool would it be if the eight riders going up this year were on the same team and it was a UK team? So planning on moving to Sittard, to their Keep Challenges Centre in February time, after all the training camps in Spain, etc. I'm looking forward to getting stuck into the races. I think Baby Giro especially, but yeah, it's going to be a good crack.
Another success for the Foundation's Gateway project has been the increase in the number of young female riders the charity is able to support. With almost every World Tour team now competing with men's and women's squads, and as many as seven British-registered UCI Continental women's teams mooted for next season, it seems that women's cycling, and particularly in the UK, is operating with unprecedented strength and depth. I caught up with five young female riders supported by the fund, either as individuals or through their teams, and that included Matilda McKibben, Neve Murphy, Ella Jameson and Millie Jenkins of Live Halo Films, and Caitlin Harvey of Cycle Division. Let's hear from them now, beginning with Ella, who described the importance of Rayner Foundation funding to her and her team.
Oh, it's been a massive help. I think just in general, the sport, it's not cheap, you know, so whether that's contribute towards equipment, races, accommodation for the races, it's just been extremely helpful. And I genuinely don't think our team would have survived this year. year without it. Wow. It's been crazy. I think individually it's really helped me and my family a lot. Particularly in Europe, it's been like really difficult. You know, it's not cheap to drive over there. You know, for me, I'm from North Yorkshire. It's a good 15-hour drive to get there at least, you know. So to have the financial help is just insane. It's really helpful.
I think that at the minute, the strength of women's cycling within Britain is just growing and growing. I mean, the fact that there are potentially going to be seven big British teams next year just shows how the sport is progressing within the UK. And I think that it's great for especially young riders like us, because it means that there is a pathway for us to progress, you know, and not only race in Britain but also throughout Europe. So I think it's great, yeah.
The fields are definitely growing as well. In national women's races, the number of women competing is definitely better, and I think the actual level that we're competing at is very strong. A lot of women go abroad and they're placing top 10, and I think the top British riders really show that we're actually a really strong country when it comes to cycling.
It's quite inspiring seeing that the people that we've grown up with and that we've raced against are getting these contracts. It makes you want it to get even more and like get out there and show that you're also capable of this.
Following the footsteps of riders like Lizzie really helps riders sort of as a youth to progress in a way that they wouldn't have before. Paris-Roubaix is the first woman to ever win, and it's just to have her name on the plaque, and it's just such a stepping stone for women cycling.
Now, the headline acts at each year's Rainer Foundation dinner are the young graduates to the professional ranks. This year, the riders in the spotlight were Oliver Knight, who signed with Team Cofidis from Aix-en-Provence, Charlie Page, who signed with TBT Unibet from Bourg-en-Bresson-sur-Clisme, and Tom Portsmouth, who moved up from Bingo's development squad to its pro team. Significantly, in an era where, as we've already heard, professional teams are beginning to scour the junior ranks of fresh talent, each of these riders completed their full 4 years as under-23s overseas before landing a professional contract. Let's hear now then from Charlie, from Tom, and from Oliver Knight, the Rainer Foundation's Rider of the Year.
It's a big step up to Pro Continental from 4 years of racing amateur in France. You take it in the stride, and I think that's the best thing to do. The harsh reality is that it's sink or swim when you move out to France. And you do 4 years there, you really settle there, and France has sort of become my home now. And even though I've signed with a Dutch team, I still plan to live in France next year. And I think that's the real special thing about the Rainer Fund, is that it's not just about going professional, it's also about the experience that moving to France, moving to a foreign country gives. And there's so many riders who have been on the fund who haven't passed professional, but I still think that it's important that they've gone out to France or any other foreign country and they've experienced it and embraced the culture. I think it's made me more resilient. A lot of the things that I've experienced out in France and a lot of the things that I've had to deal with from the past 4 years from moving out there when you're 18, I think now is that when you take the step up to professional is that really, I think Harrison and Ollie would say the same, is that from then it's like, oh, everything's done for me now. I don't have to worry about this, and at the end of the day I just have to ride my bike. It relieves a lot, but also is that I think it's a real challenge moving out to a foreign country and you experience so many great things and so many memories that you're going to hold for the rest of your life.
I was with Bingo development team this year. They showed a lot of trust in me this year and offered me the protein contracts for the next 2 years as a Neo Pro, so yeah, looking forward to it. I was first on a Belgian team as a second year junior in 2019, but that followed 3 years of also racing primarily at Kermesse level. So I started in Belgium at 14 years old. Belgium racing is a completely different level. It's twice as long as most British races, which is why it drew me out there, because the British races, especially at the younger level, are just short in duration and almost intensity than they were in Belgium. I think there is something to say, mind your time and learn your trades. Like I said, I've got a lot of friends from 2017 who, like myself, are turning pro now at the end of their fourth year. You know, you've got Ollie Knight from Rainer, you've got Charlie Bate, we're all fourth years. We've by the time, and we've got there through, you know, learning and testing and making the networking choices and all of that. And, you know, you see the same with Zeb Kiffin and Rory Townsend as well. They're 25, 26. they're now making the jump to pro. So there is something to say just having a bit of experience, but I've got a lot of friends along the way. Lars Kraft, you've got Jasper Diaga, you've got Dylan van der Storm, all in Belgium. You know, they've, again, third, fourth years, they've waited, they've been patient, they know where they want to go, and yeah, it's paying off for a lot of people now.
The last couple of seasons, I sort of had in the back of my mind that it was becoming a bit more of a reality, and I knew that things were possible. Less of a dream and more of a goal, and yeah, it's just a pleasure to actually pull it off. Over the moon to sign with the French team. I feel like I've done my 4 years in France, and it just seems right to go to a French professional team. It seems familiar, but also it's another world. So yeah, it's been a really smooth transition. I was lucky enough to still get some races in as a stagiaire this year, but yeah, no, it's just brilliant. 4 years, I feel like I've done a real traditional step up, and I mean, just can't thank enough to the foundation, but also everyone that's managed to donate over the years.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, while I was gathering flash interviews, my co-host Phil Jones, Brother UK's managing director, was having detailed conversations with some of the scene's primary movers and shakers. Phil, of course, is a member of British Cycling's elite road racing task force, as well as the leader of a business that has stood at the side of the domestic sport for more than a decade. At the end of the evening, Phil and I found a quiet corner of the hotel lobby to discuss another superb edition of the Rayner Foundation's annual dinner, and to reflect on the Foundation's excellent work, how it contributes to the wider ecosphere of elite and professional cycling in the UK and internationally.
So Phil, one of our sort of continuing themes here on the Brother UK Cycling Podcast is the challenges being faced by the senior national competitions, the National Road Series. But what we've heard tonight again and again from people like Giles Pidcock and his riders is that the scene works for juniors very effectively. There were 9 rounds this year of the National Junior Road Series, and Giles has placed 6 of his riders with World Tour development teams next season. Clearly that part of the puzzle works.
Yeah, it's fascinating talking to Giles, because I think what he's done is opened up and revealed what work is getting done, sort of almost aside from all of the systems and academies and various other things that are, you know, often being done by British Cycling. Giles seems to sort of developed a little super system himself. And if we think back to what's going on in the way World Tour teams are operating at the moment, that they are literally just diving in and grabbing juniors now with a view to them being future, you know, World Tour riders. So I think there's something interesting in that. And clearly Giles has got an amazing strike rate. If he's got that many riders, you know, ascending to World Tour, then clearly he's doing something really, really right.
Yeah. And these are not small teams. You know, these are riders going to Jumbo-Visma. They're going to Team DSM Firmenich. They're going to Action Hagens Berman, which has been the leading World Tour development independent development team for many, many years. So, you know, Giles' success is real. Another very positive line that we heard this evening and that we're keenly aware of as the sponsor of 2 women's teams is that the British women's scene is firing on all cylinders at a level that it's never fired at before. And somebody who gave us testimony to support that was Lizzie Dyden.
Yeah, that was amazing. We were very lucky tonight, Tim, because we've had Lizzie Dyden on our table and her husband, Bill. So that was a real treat to have dinner in her company. Really one of our, you know, most successful ever, you know, women cyclists, quite an incredible palmarès. And absolutely, if you contrast what's going on in the women's racing scene at the moment in the UK versus the men's, it's very, very different. Very, very different. In fact, we've got, you know, talk that there could be 4 women's continental teams in 2024. And of course, that contrasts massively with the men's team, where there won't be that number. So something's going on around women's, you know, cycling, and whether it might be because of this sort of overinvestment, I guess, by large brands to bring the sport up to the parity level that it needed to be. So let's be clear about that. There's an overinvestment happening to deal with the underinvestment of the past. Let's make that clear. But as a result, it means that it's an exciting thing, in my opinion, to have suddenly 4 continental teams in the UK going abroad, having a racing program in Belgium, in France, in Portugal, in Ireland, you know, to develop these riders, I think there's nothing but good times ahead for the women's scene. It looks really, really positive.
Absolutely, yeah. We can justifiably claim to have played our part there as the sponsor of two women's teams for at least the last 3 years and mixed teams before that. So that is a success story. The one piece of the jigsaw that is still not working correctly, as we say, is the senior men's scene. And it was interesting, you know, we talked to a number of riders this evening, Sean Flynn, Lewis Askey, you know, World Tour professionals who were sort of sad almost on behalf of their colleagues that young British male riders are finding it hard to graduate from the domestic scene.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, because obviously we've had conversations tonight and we, you know, won't name every single person, but, you know, there's some significant people in the room tonight who have influence at World Tour level and domestic level. And what's evident is that the British scene, the British racing scene, is not looked at externally as a place that if you have a race win, so let's say you won Lincoln, that doesn't carry much weight with, let's say, a director sportif or a scout of a World Tour team. What carries weight is if you're a British rider who's gone abroad, competed with similar level riders, duked it out, and then got yourself a race win against other really competitive riders from a broad range of teams and backgrounds. So that seems to be the sort of hunting ground that they're looking for. So what can we learn from that? Well, the one thing we can learn is that we can still have a conveyor belt working here from juniors upwards to send people to the World Tour. That's evident. We've only got to see tonight in the Rainer dinner, there's 21 riders who have this potentially to, you know, to go to World Tour. Okay, not all of them are going to make it, but some will. So we have a background and a history and a winning pattern of how to do that successfully, which is great. So the question then comes is, in the past, maybe the job of the domestic racing scene was to bring people through, you know, step by step by step by step. But that is clearly changing. That is really changing. And now the domestic racing scene, we've got to look at that and say, is it the job of the domestic racing scene to try and propel people to the World Tour? It may not be. It may well be about providing a competitive racing environment for people that either just want to race at the weekends or somebody that didn't make it to the World Tour who still wants to race, but they might stay in the sport. They might become a physio. They might become a bike fitter. They might become a mechanic. Just because you didn't make it to World Tour doesn't mean there's not a career in cycling for you. There could well be. So, you know, these are, I think, some of the questions that we've been grappling with in the task force work that we're doing. You know, we have to sort of work backwards, really, to say, well, even though the sport has been brilliant and has served, you know, a lot of people well, what we're going to look at is what is the model for the sport moving forward, taking into account all things, including the fact that the route to World Tour seems to be changing a lot.
Yeah, I mean, we are living in extraordinary times, aren't we? It's almost difficult to keep up the amount of World Tour development teams that have been formed, even in the last 3 years. Ineos, strangely, is an exception that it doesn't have a World Tour development team. And yet squads like DSM and squads like FDG, they can't get enough British riders. They are impressed by the work ethic. They're impressed by the strength, by the standard of competition. And isn't that a strange dichotomy that you've got the professional ranks desperate to recruit young British riders, and yet races, as you rightly say, like the Lincoln Grand Prix, which is a fantastic race, cutting absolutely no ice with World Tour teams.
Yeah, clearly that, you know, that's not great, because of course if you won Lincoln, you will come off and go, that was a very hard way race to win. Of course it is. Look at who's won Lincoln in the past. But I think this difficulty is it's just not held in the same esteem when it's coming to the cut about who World Tour teams now want. So it sort of strikes me that now, if we are developing, you know, if you're in an under 23, let's say, that actually it might already be too late, even at that age. And it seems that the clock's being wound further back. And what we're looking at now is who are these juniors, are sort of somewhere between, you know, 10 plus, that are showing an aptitude, a skill, a capability, an interest, a motivation, you know, an ability to race a bike. And it seems that actually, you know, learning from other sports, that cycling now seems to be really looking at this and going back to, could this all be just about having better academies, better feeder systems, rather than, you know, waiting for somebody to make it in a domestic scene and then trying to place them later on to perhaps plug a gap or do something else that they're later on. It strikes me they're going to change the way they do things, and we're going to have far more junior development pathways from whatever's going on in the junior scenes in each of these countries into the World Tour.
Yeah, and it's funny, isn't it? The Reina Foundation, despite this incredible proliferation of development pathways that are now occurring to the World Tour, the Reina Foundation remains a constant, that it will always be there to help young British riders make it to the World Tour. They're not blind to these changes. And we heard tonight, didn't we, from Giles Pidcock speaking from the stage, talking about the Gateway Programme, and the Reina Foundation funded 84 junior riders this year. So clearly they're hip to these changes as well.
Yeah, and you know, I think Giles is clearly a driving force behind all of that. And you know, great to chat to him tonight and to, you know, hear about Tom's success and, you know, Giles as Tom's dad, observing all of that. But actually, I asked Giles directly, Giles, what is driving you to do this? What is making you so passionate about bringing these young people through? And you know, he very much was, you know, I've seen what it can do for Tom. And what he said was that there's not a big enough story being told about cycling as a potential career, lucrative career for you as a young person. So if somebody says to you in school, you know, you've got the possibility to make it as a Premier League footballer, then what's your immediate response to that? Your immediate response is, well, they're going to have a massive payday, they're going to earn a fortune, and they're going to earn in a week what I earn in a year. That's what we think about Premier League footballers, don't we? And what he was saying was, you know, we're not really telling that story that at World Tour, that's also possible. You can become a star at World Tour and have that same seven-figure salary, success. You know, look at Mark Cavendish, you know, look at Chris Froome, look at Geraint Thomas, look at Bradley Wiggins, look at these people who become superstars, globally renowned and known, and of course who earned great deals in sponsorship and income riding for these World Tour teams. So what he suggested was that we're not telling that story. We're not telling the story that cycling can be your profession, whether you are a mechanic, whether a physio, soigneur, you know, statistician, driver, it doesn't really matter. Cycling is an industry that you can enter, and you can enter it as an athlete, and you might make it to the big time and earn a lot of money, or you might make it as, you know, part of the background teams, running a team, being a team manager, being a director sportive, whatever that might be. And I thought that was a very interesting point.
Yeah, absolutely. And just wonderful also that despite this professionalism, this opportunity to earn significant sums of money, and a charitable organisation like the Reina Foundation remains at the heart of helping young British riders to enter that world. And it's, you really get a sense of their credibility, of their authenticity at an event like the dinner. I know that Joss aims for, you know, an atmosphere similar to your old school club cycling dinner. I mean, it's that with bells on, isn't it? But there is a really nice atmosphere in the room. It's not a cutthroat environment. It's a very friendly, very welcoming environment where you can sit down next to one of the best cyclists this country's ever produced and have a nice one-to-one conversation.
Yeah, without a doubt. When I first got into cycling, I guess I think it was 2008, so when I bought my first bike, etc. And within about 3 to 4 years, I'd heard about the Rayner, what at the time was called the Dave Rayner Fund dinner, and everybody went to it at the end of the season, everybody. And, you know, it was the place everybody came to sort of see the end of the season out, have a bit of a late drink, see everybody in the industry and the sport. You know, and here we are now, I guess, 15 years on from that. And I've been to, I think, 3 now. So I think the, obviously we did the Tour Britain One Day Ahead in 2018. And that was the 1 year that, obviously when we're handing the money over, I couldn't actually come to the dinner. So James Golding came and did that work. And then, of course, we came into 2019, which I came. Then we went to COVID, of course, and then post-pandemic. So the times that I've been, you know, I've really, really enjoyed it. And I've been very, very impressed by the professional organisation of the place. Some of the auction items are just unreal. You're going to find it very difficult to buy some of those auction items. They're just so rare and actually very, very reasonably priced, actually, for some of the things that are selling. So it's a fantastic evening. It really is. And I think the most important thing is that you're seeing riders on stage that actually you may not have heard of today, but you definitely will be hearing of them in 2 or 3 years' time, because they are going to be riders who are going to be in the World Tour.
Absolutely. No question about that. They all look horribly young.
Yeah, compared to us, Tim. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's terrifying on the one hand, but hugely inspiring. On the other, the future of British road racing, full stop, is in a very, very healthy place. And that is thanks in very large part to the Rayner Foundation. Phil, thanks very much. It's been great to catch up.
Thanks, Tim. Let's go to the bar.
So great to get Phil's observations on the Rayner Foundation and the pathways connecting the domestic scene to the UCI World Tour. Despite the economic challenges affecting us all, the Rayner Foundation continues to support young British riders in their quest to turn professional. This year's dinner attracted 301 guests, a healthy turnout, but still less than the peak years before COVID. If you want to support the Rayner Foundation and play your part in ensuring the next generation of British riders receives the opportunity to excel, simply visit theraynerfoundation.org and click the donate button. Thanks very much indeed to all our guests, and thank you very much indeed to everybody out there for listening.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.